On this week's 51%, we learn how to unlearn the harmful beliefs we've been conditioned to have with Dr. Samra Zafar, author of Unconditional.
You can feel the emotions without giving into them. And that is how, over time, with practice, with compassion, you start to change your default responses. You start to rewire them.
We also meet this year's Miss Connecticut. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it, I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. Growing up, we absorb a lot of lessons and ideas from our communities. Expectations for, you know, how we should act, how we should look, and what we should strive for in the future. Societal, cultural, and religious expectations can weigh on anyone, but they can be especially limiting for women, sometimes in extreme ways. And once you're living on your own and have that independence, how do you decide what you really believe and uncondition yourself? Dr. Samra Zafar is a resident psychiatrist at Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto, a public speaker, and the author of the new book, Unconditional: Break Through Past Limits to Transform Your Future. Zafar, originally from Pakistan, came to Canada after being forced into marriage with a complete stranger at just 17 years old. Her first book, a memoir called A Good Wife, tells the harrowing tale of how she escaped that abusive marriage with her two daughters. Zafar says she thought the hardest part about life post-divorce would be learning all of the things she still didn't know about finances, about living on your own. But it turns out the hardest part was unlearning all the harmful messaging she had internalized about love, faith, parenting, and herself. In Unconditional, she shares advice on how to unlearn those messages while prioritizing your mental health and learning to love yourself unconditionally.
One of my very earliest memories as a child was my mother telling me the story of a pious woman who wanted a glass of water before she went to bed, and she asked her daughter to bring her water, and the daughter brings her water. By the time the daughter comes back, the mother has fallen asleep, and the daughter stands by the bedside all night waiting for her mom to wake up. And when the mom wakes up and sees that, she is filled with incredible love and affection for her daughter. And that's how you earn a mother's love, Samra. I, at that young age, I don't know, I think I was 5 or 6 years old, went and got a glass of water when my mother had fallen asleep and stood by the bedside, but fell asleep on the floor and felt horrible in the morning that I was not good enough to earn my mom's love. That's the kind of love I grew up with, which was very much rooted in subservience and obedience and servitude, something that you have to earn. It's not something that's just given to you because you are lovable or you are worthy. So your worth, your lovability is always being questioned. And that is how it played out in my marriage as well. I have to climb on that pedestal of being a good wife in order to earn love from my husband, in order to earn respect from my in-laws, because it's not something that's just given to you. It's something that you have to achieve, and you can never achieve it because it's such an impossible standard to live up to. So even when I left my marriage, and now I was going into new relationships in my life, I was starting to date. I did not know what healthy love looks like. I had never seen it. I had never seen it from my parents. I had never seen it between my parents. And I had never seen it in my marriage. So my idea or my blueprint of love was very, very flawed. Here I was excelling in my career and in my academics. But at the same time, I found myself in one toxic relationship after another, putting up with behavior that I would never put up with in other aspects of my life. And a few of my very close friends used to say to me, you know, you're so confident and you're so driven in all these other areas of your life, but what happens to you in romantic relationships? Why do you put up with shit behavior? It wasn't until I started doing that internal trauma work with my psychologist at the time and realized the messages that I grew up with about love and relationships are so faulty, and they are coloring and informing the kind of relationships that I'm putting myself up for now in today, in this day and age. So even though those responses or, shutting myself down or trying to earn my parents' love or obedience and whatnot served me back then because I was a kid and I needed it, or kept me safe in my marriage because then I was allowed to hopefully navigate conflict and not make him angry. But now they're act those same responses that protected me back then are sabotaging me now because I'm not in that same place. I am an empowered woman, I'm independent, and I don't need to put up with that kind of behavior or serve people in order to get acceptance, love, and respect from them. And so that journey was profound for me and my liberation. And today I'm in a relationship that is healthy and beautiful and wonderful and supportive, but it took a lot of work for me to get here.
Well, thank you so much for just for sharing that with us, but also in your book. I think your book does a really good job of balancing both your personal experience and also giving some of those how-to tips and advice. I think that's very important because I feel like, at least in my group of friends and in the group of women that I socialize with and stuff like that, we're very good at looking through our past and finding things that maybe explain a little bit why we are the way we are today. We'll talk to each other and be like, yeah, maybe something you have to work on. But it's very difficult to figure out, what that work actually looks like and what the next step is. I find myself even just sort of looking at the things that I personally want to work on in my life, being like, okay, I understand how I got here, but what am I supposed to do with that? So what was step one for you when it came to wanting to unlearn some of this harmful messaging?
The first step is recognition. Understand and recognize where is this coming from. So, for instance, if you are finding yourself feeling imposter syndrome, and a lot of women feel it, and let me just define imposter syndrome first. Imposter syndrome does not mean that you don't have enough confidence or you are not good enough. It is basically a result of the messages that we are surrounded by as women, that we are too emotional, we are not confident enough, we're not assertive enough, we're too this, we're too that. So when we're growing up with all kinds of things in the media around us, things that women hear, women are not good with money, or women are supposed to be nurturing and caring. So all those leadership skills that are more valued in today's world are not something that comes naturally to women. Like all these kinds of really faulty messages that we hear. It again, like I said, forms our blueprint. And when we go out and achieve those dreams and are in those leadership roles and are in those in that boardroom, because we've heard that we don't belong there, we feel like we belong, don't belong there. Even though we are there, we've earned it. We are there because we deserve to be, but we inside feel, oh, I don't deserve this. I feel like a fake. People are gonna get to know that I don't belong here, etc. So, imposter syndrome is not because you're not confident enough or good enough or any of that. It's basically a result of those faulty messages. Now, when we recognize that, it gives us power because now we know, oh, it's not us. It's all this crap that I grew up with listening to. So, it's not me. That is liberation, first of all, right there, because you now stop internalizing all those things. And then the next step is to treat it with compassion. So oftentimes when we don't like an emotion, whether it's fear, imposter syndrome, or anything that's difficult, we don't like feeling that emotion. We try to fight it. However, that is actually counterproductive because fighting it means I don't accept you, go away, I don't want to feel you, whatever that emotion is. And when we fight something, especially an emotion, it comes back and it comes back stronger. So the key is not to fight it. Instead, it is to accept it. Acceptance does not mean you give in. Acceptance simply means, yes, you're here, whatever that difficult emotion is, name it. Yes, you're here, fear, or yes, you're here, imposter syndrome, or confidence crisis, or whatever. And it's okay. You can stay here. You can sit here with me. And I know where you're coming from. I'm not going to fight you. At the same time, I am the one in the driver's seat. I get to call the shots. So you can accept it without giving into it. And the analogy I often use there is a child throwing a tantrum in the grocery store and they want a candy. And if you fight with the child, if you yell back at them, it's not going to go down well. It's actually going to become worse and worse. At the same time, you don't give in and give them the candy. You soothe them. You let them feel their emotions. You let them have that anger and cry it out if they need to. And then you say, it's okay. It's all right to feel this way. And we're still going to go on. We're not going to give you the candy anyway. So you can feel the emotions without giving in to them. And that is how, over time, with practice, with compassion, you start to change your responses, your default responses. You start to rewire them.
How long did it take you to start to rewire some of these responses, or is it a lifelong thing you got to work on?
It is a lifelong thing. It's much more difficult in the beginning to do it because think of it like, you know, your brain is a series of roads and highways and whatnot. So the highways are very quick. So if, like I gave the example of love in the beginning, that love is something that needs to be earned. That was a core belief that I grew up with. So when I stopped doing that, when I stopped giving in, when I stopped saying sorry for things that I did not have any reason to apologize for, it was uncomfortable. It was because it was going against the highway. It was going on the opposite direction. It was like, oh my God, what am I doing? I'm going to lose out on love. I'm going to be abandoned. I'm never, you know, this person's not going to be with me. So it raised pain and discomfort. However, at the same time, being able to talk to myself, no, it's okay. I know where this fear is coming from, but we're changing things now. This is not healthy. I know it objectively. It's not healthy. So even our cognitive brain can understand that something is not healthy, but our emotional brain still has that emotional response, which is what we have to manage at that time by compassion, by acceptance. So it is difficult in the beginning because when you're starting to do something different than what you've always done, you're now building a new highway, a new road, which means you're, you know, having to dig in the foundation and, you know, and pave over it. And it's going to take a while before it becomes a highway. And I think some things are easier than others, and some are more difficult. You know, the love part for me was a more challenging one. However, there have been other things that I have worked through and I have helped my patients or my readers or audiences work through, and I mentor a lot of women, so I've seen, you know, some women have struggled with confidence in their career, and they are confident at home, but in their career, they've always been told that women cannot achieve leadership roles, or women are not good with money, or and whatnot. So again, with patience, with time, with compassion, with work, you know, I always say work is the most important part. Like when we say time heals everything, no, it does not. It's actually time and work and patience. So through that, you can absolutely do it. And some challenges will be a little bit tougher than others, but and may require more time than others, but it's a very individual journey.
I'm wondering if there are things we should be doing to, I guess, just to take care of ourselves mentally or just take care of ourselves in general while we're doing this kind of work. Because I'm someone who can tend to be a little bit hard on myself. And when things are challenging, I sometimes lean towards blaming myself for it. What kinds of things should I be reminding myself here?
That is such a great question, and thank you for sharing that vulnerability because it is, I think it's universal to most women. We all have this hardwired response to shame ourselves and be hard on ourselves. I oftentimes have women say to me, "Oh, I'm my worst critic. I am the perfectionist whose standards I can never live up to." And we actually think that's a good thing. You know, we say it like it's something to be proud of. I'm my worst critic. I used to say that, you know, I'm a perfectionist. However, what that does is, first of all, perfectionism is an illusion. It does not exist. And by being a perfectionist, we are automatically setting up standards that are impossible to achieve. And then we constantly feel like a failure. And then we beat ourselves up even more internally. And our default responses are either we shame ourselves, we are hard on ourselves, we tell ourselves, oh no, what did I do? I'm so stupid and whatnot. Or we give ourselves pep talks and say, get back up and keep going. And we don't allow ourselves time to rest and relax. And one thing that I would say, one trick that I often leave for my audiences and readers and even patients is imagine the person who you love the most, whoever that may be. Let's say your child or your spouse or your partner or your best friend, whoever that person is that you love the most in the world, you can never imagine saying anything unkind to them. You can never imagine saying anything bad to them or about them to anyone else. So imagine that person, and if they came to you with the same problem that you're facing right now, let's say they've had a failure at work, let's say they've had someone criticize them, or they've had a breakup, or they had a fight with their spouse or their best friend, or they had a friendship issue, whatever it could be, right? If they came to you with a problem, would you ever say to them, oh yeah, you're a loser, you can never make it, might as well quit while you're ahead? Would you ever say things like that? Would you ever shame them? Would you ever say things to them that the things that you're saying to yourself? Would you ever talk to them the way you're talking to yourself? And if the answer is no, then you change your inner script. So speak to yourself like you would speak to the person you love the most, and allow yourself time to rest. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to look away. It's okay to rest. Relaxation is not being lazy. It's actually necessary for our brains and for our recuperation and for our well-being. And watch out for signs of burnout before burnout actually happens. There are signs you can see that are precursors. And one of the big ones is when you start feeling less, as in like feeling numb, when you start to not enjoy things that you otherwise would normally enjoy. So check in with yourself emotionally and physically before the burnout sneaks up on you. Be proactive about your mental health. And lastly, like give yourself 10 minutes a day, even on the good days. In fact, more important to do that on the good days, put that in your calendar as me time, 10, 20, whatever you can carve out realistically, and stick with it. That is your me time. Go for a walk, do a meditation, do something that is completely unplugging from all productivity and gives you a chance to be one with yourself and with your body. And check in with your body, pay attention to those feelings, because oftentimes our bodies will tell us things that our minds cannot comprehend yet.
I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about, how we do this work, how do we take care of ourselves while we do this work, but also how we do the work and take care of ourselves while still being bombarded by a lot of these messages, on a societal level, at least. We've seen abortion rights get rolled back in many states, at least here in the US. There are still a lot of hateful messaging towards women online and in real life, too. It can be hard, I think, to ditch some of this harmful messaging around womanhood when it's in your face like all the time. Do you have any tips for taking care of yourself right now in this political moment?
Yes, that's such a great question. And it's something that I'm thinking about a lot right now, and it's something that's coming up for a lot of people, is that we are surrounded by these messages that basically is telling us that the world is going back. So not only are we unlearning the past messages, we're actually fighting against the current ones as well. And it's exhausting. It can be really draining. It can feel absolutely debilitating and demoralizing that we are relitigating the battles that we've thought we had already won. I have two daughters, and my older daughter is a journalist, and my younger one is starting university. And one day, my younger one called me, just this is just last week, and she was crying and having a really tough day. And I asked her what's happening, and she said, Mom, I've just been reading the news all day, and there is just so much hate in the world. It is becoming really awful, and I'm afraid that what if I have less rights than you did? Because that's what we seem to be going towards. We're actively losing rights as women, as LGBTQ plus folks, as anyone who is not a white man. And I didn't know how to answer her question. There are things that we cannot control, unfortunately, as much as we want to. And then we feel a pressure to stay informed because we want to know everything that's happening because that helps us feel like we're in control. But control is an illusion. It doesn't alleviate worry. Trying to control things actually intensifies worry and anxiety. So there's a balancing act. Yes, we need to stay informed because we need to know what we're up against. We want to know how women in other areas of the world are being affected, or their rights are being rolled back, or, like the Taliban is back in power in Afghanistan, and now girls there cannot go back to school. I am originally from Pakistan, which is not far away from that part from Afghanistan. So it is something that I was not allowed to go to school, and I was in an abusive marriage. So it is something that is personal to me, and I want to know about it. At the same time, can I do something about it right now? No, I can do things in my own way. I have led virtual workshops for young women in Afghanistan to help them keep their courage and their confidence going. So those are small things I can do. But can I control what's happening on a macro level? Not much. It then makes us feel like we want to take control, we want to know, and we fall into this trap of doom scrolling, and it takes a toll. And it takes away our power to be able to be better, do better, and stay well. So the advice that I gave to my daughter, and this is something I would say to you and other women out there, is that it's okay to look away. It's okay to set boundaries. It's important, essential, in fact, to balance staying informed versus staying well. And you can do it in little steps. Let's say give yourself half an hour every day to watch the news and read up on things and stay informed, but then unplug unless there's something big that happens and somebody talks to you about it. Oh, did you hear this so and so? But unplug, like make it a point to not engage with this never-ending cycle of trying to know everything that's happening out there. Because again, the reason we do that is because it gives us an illusion of control, but actually it's actually amplifying our anxiety. So making sure that we build a boundary with how much we're consuming and understanding what is in our control and what is not in our control, and being very, very proactive about our well-being and engaging in things that give us joy. Because if we're no good to ourselves, we are no good to anyone else.
Well, Dr. Savar, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Is there any other advice that we haven't hit yet, or anything that you hope readers most take away from your book if they're trying to go on this unlearning journey?
I think the one thing that I will say is it can feel like a very difficult time to live in right now. And it can feel like we are just caught up in these cycles of oppression and our rights being rolled back and things are just going backwards. And it's easy to lose hope. And my message would be hang on to hope. Hope is our biggest motivator. It's our biggest strength right now. And the way to build hope is to engage with your community and align with people and speak with people who are aligned in your thought values. And you can feel like, yes, I'm not living in an echo chamber where everything seems to be going against me. There are people who have similar values like me. There are people I can engage with. Things will get better. So keep that optimism and that hope strong. And I'm sure many people right now are finding that, their loved ones have beliefs that are problematic or their values are not aligned. And you may be losing friends, you may be losing relationships, you may be losing even family members. But it's important to understand that people walking out of your life because they target you for unfair reasons, or their values are misaligned with yours, they just leave space for others to walk in who are actually going to be your people and your community. So, my message is question things. It's important to say, you know what, this is not okay, and I'm going to hang on to my values and I'm going to push forward for progress. Secondly, hang on to the hope that things will get better. And third, focus in what you can control. And even small actions, small acts of kindness can go a long, long, long way. And never ever stop speaking up. Speaking up and sharing our stories has immense, immense power to change someone's mind. When I started to share my story, I didn't know what corners of the world it's reaching. And I once got an email from a man who lived in Karachi, Pakistan, the same city that I was born in, that I was married off in as a child bride. A man from there wrote to me and said, "I have a 16-year-old daughter whose wedding is fixed for next month. After reading your story, I've decided to cancel her wedding and send her to school."
Wow.
And I was 16 when that happened to me. So just by speaking up, just my voice and my story had the power to break the cycle and change that trajectory for somebody else.
Dr. Sebra Safar is a resident psychiatrist, public speaker, and the author of Unconditional: Breakthrough Past Limits to Transform Your Future. You can learn more about Samra and her work at her website, samrasafar.com. A woman's empowerment can come from anywhere. For Jenna Hoffman, for example, it was pageants. Hoffman was recently crowned the winner of the Miss Connecticut USA pageant, and she will go on to represent the state in the Miss USA competition. WSHU's Sabrina Garone spoke with Hoffman about embracing her femininity, finding confidence, and inspiring the next generation of young women.
Well, first of all, Jenna, congratulations on the title. From what I understand, you've been at this for some time now, right? And won some other titles as well. So could you tell me a little bit about how you got started in the pageant world and some of the preparation that goes in before it's time to compete?
I saw an advertisement on Facebook. I was into modeling at the time, but I saw that advertisement and I was like, I want to go for it. I thought it would be a cool experience. It would get me out of my little bubble and really just have a different experience that I've never had before. And once I started, I never wanted to stop. The preparation is a lot between finding wardrobe for pageantry and then having coaches. You know, you have a fitness coach, you could have an interview, walking coach. So it is a lot, but it's a lot of fun. And it really just made me the woman that I am today.
And you've used your platform in a lot of cool ways, one being putting emphasis on mental health. Could you tell me a little bit about why mental health awareness is so important to you?
Unfortunately, I suffer from anxiety, but other than me personally suffering from anxiety, I lost a close friend of mine to suicide. So that is why I do what I do now, because I want to not only share my story, but I want to continue to share his story as well and continue on his legacy. So many people suffer from mental health illnesses, so it's really good to bring light to it because everyone needs to know that they're not alone. Everyone suffers from some kind of thing or knows someone who suffers from anxiety or depression, and it's important that we talk about it.
And attention to mental health, of course, should be a priority for everyone, but I know you also work with a lot of young women and girls as part of the organization Girls Inc. What do you hear from them? Is their generation experiencing any unique struggles when it comes to mental health and self-confidence?
For me, growing up, social media was just getting started. And nowadays, technology is constantly advancing. So now younger women are always on social media, and it really does have a negative impact on your self-esteem because you see on social media these beautiful women, and it's not always necessarily the truth. So we really have to be aware of that and make sure that we're telling the younger generation that yes, you see this, but you are just as beautiful no matter what. And that's very important to me. But although there are cons to it, social media is a very positive thing. For me, I've been able to advance my platform using social media, and it's been a way to connect with more people. So there's pros and cons.
Pageants have certainly changed a lot over the last couple of years here, and I'm wondering, how has doing pageants shaped your view on femininity and what it means to be a woman?
It's much more than just beauty. It's about the woman on the inside, not just the outside, which is very, very important. And that's what I loved about pageants. When I saw women on stage competing at Miss Universe, what I loved was that, yes, they're beautiful on the outside, but they were beautiful on the inside as well. And they were passionate about something that they love. And they wanted to help the community in any way possible. And that's why I fell in love with pageants. And it just continues to be evolving in great ways. And I'm happy to be a pageant girl. And it has had many negatives in the past. And now it's just, it's really great. And I'm very happy to be a part of it.
That was Jenna Hoffman, who was recently crowned Miss Connecticut USA, speaking with WSHU's Sabrina Caron. Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio, based in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at wamcpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. You can stay in the loop on all of WAMC shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King for 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night and down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. Lost my cool, no electricity. Hot rain on the concrete. Sweet melting little girl dreams. They said, oh, I want a big life, not a house that could have been like. Where are you taking me? Where are you taking me?